October 26th, 2015. It's one of those days when you look at the news and your heart breaks. Well, at least if you're a meat eater anyway. The Guardian read, processed meats rank alongside cancer causes, says WHO. NPR declared it was a bad day for bacon, while The Sun went with banger out of order. Sausages and bacon top cancer list, increasing your risk of cancer by 18%. Well, on this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we're asking, is my bacon sandwich really gonna kill me? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and yes, this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we ask them the big questions. And I promise you, over the course of this series, we're going to be talking about a lot of different areas of science. And today, it's bacon's turn. We're going to be looking at the numbers behind the bowel cancer link. So, who better to help than statistician Dr. Jen Rogers, the Director of Statistical Consultancy at the University of Oxford. We met at a cafe over, what else? Bacon sandwiches.
You wouldn't believe how many people, you wouldn't believe how many maths teachers have even said to me that bacon is now banned in their house because of this 18% increase in bowel cancer, that people just aren't eating it anymore. I get so many people say to me, do I actually have to be worried?
The worries stemmed from a report released by the World Health Organization. Since 1971, the agency has been crafting lists about the causes of cancer. Simply put, there is the it does cause cancer list. Then there's the it probably causes cancer list. And then the everything else that doesn't cause cancer list. Last year, bacon made its way onto the it does cause cancer list, alongside arsenic, asbestos, alcohol, and tobacco, because scientists found that it was statistically significant in increasing the risk of getting bowel cancer. Keywords, statistically significant.
Now, statistical significance, all that does is it tells us whether or not something is a risk or it isn't. It doesn't really tell us anything about what that risk is, how big that risk is, and how it affects us. There were loads of headlines saying that because now bacon was on this list, and smoking is on that list as well, that bacon and smoking were now as risky as each other in causing cancer. And that's not true.
Bacon has a rich and salty history dating back to 1500 BC in China. The Romans had their own version called potasso, made of cured pork shoulder. But in modern times, mass-produced factory bacon is made by injecting salty water and chemicals, including nitrates, into the pork belly before it's cured. And when you put smoking head-to-head with bacon, it's clear that the danger in our fridge is way less than habitually smoking cigarettes.
If we look at lung cancer and smoking, for every 400 people, we would expect 4 people to get lung cancer anyway, without smoking. That's just going to happen. If you then look at people who smoke 25 or more cigarettes every single day, that increase goes up 24 times to 96 in every 400 people. So it's an extra 92 people in every 400 we would expect to get lung cancer if you were smoking 25 or more cigarettes every single day. Now compare that to what we get for bacon. Now, bowel cancer affects just over 6% of people in the population. So for every 400 people, you'd expect about 24 people to get bowel cancer anyway. Bacon, eating 50 grams of bacon every single day increases this risk by 18%, which means that if you were to take 400 people, all who ate bacon every single day, you would now expect 28 of those to get bowel cancer. So that's an increase of 4 people in every 400 compared to 92 in every 400 for smoking. So even though they both may cause cancer, to say that they're both as risky as each other is probably pushing it a little bit too far.
So 4 in 400 bacon eaters versus 92 in 400 smokers. In musical terms, that is the difference between a quartet and an orchestra playing a symphony. In reality, the biggest two risk factors for bowel cancer are two things that we can do nothing about: increasing age and family history. When the WHO added bacon to the list of cancer-causing agents, they carefully looked at a lot of different studies involving the food. But Jen says calculating the risk of bacon can be tricky, mainly because the data surrounding bacon generally comes from observational studies rather than clinical trials.
People who eat loads of bacon every single day are probably more likely to have unhealthy diets and unhealthy lifestyles in general. So they might eat less fruit and vegetables and things like that. You know, if you're eating bacon sandwich for breakfast, you're not eating fruit for breakfast. And how do you know that it's the bacon or it's just the lack of fruit and vegetables that's actually the cause of cancer? And that's the problem with these observational studies. In an ideal world, what you'd do is you'd take a shed load of people, split them in half and say, you know, keep all the diets exactly the same, all their exercise exactly the same, apart from you're going to eat loads of bacon and you're going to eat none. That's the only way that you can ever really truly say that it's the bacon that's actually causing this. Whenever you do any sort of observational study, you do have to worry about what we call these confounders.
Confounders are like this. In the summer, there's a spike in ice cream sales. There is also a rise in drowning deaths. Does that mean the amount of ice cream you eat causes you to drown? No, that's ridiculous. So to conclude that ice cream sales and drowning are linked, well, that's just wrong. It's just the summer is driving these two things. But confounders like this can really trip up observational studies and how they're reported.
There were some really nice headlines a few years ago that were looking at fizzy drinks and violence in teenagers that said that teenagers who drank fizzy drinks were more likely to be violent and actually more likely to carry a gun. Now, it could be that drinking fizzy drinks makes teenagers more likely to be violent, or it could be that there is something else that makes teenagers more likely to be violent and also more likely to drink fizzy drinks. You know, maybe some sort of social aspects, some socioeconomic aspects that means that you're more likely to drink fizzy drinks and you're more likely to be violent. Or it could be that being violent is thirsty work and at the end of it, you want a fizzy drink. You know, when you're doing these observational studies, you've always got to be really careful of trying to say, yes, one thing causes another. That's a big leap. I mean, the WHO, they did do a lot of research and they had a lot of studies. And I'm you know, under no illusion that, you know, eating a lot of bacon probably does cause cancer. But it's eating a substantial amount of bacon every single day increases your risk of getting cancer by a little bit. Eating a bacon sandwich once a week on a Saturday morning probably isn't really going to do that much.
When the World Health Organization did release their findings that fateful October day, it did initially hurt bacon sales. Supermarkets saw a £3 million drop in sales over the 2 weeks following the report, and a pork producer in Northern Ireland even threatened to take legal action against the WHO.
I think that sometimes numbers and percentages can be difficult for people to get their heads around, and it's easier to then just say, I'm just not going to eat bacon.
Jen says since then, things have calmed down, pork sales have slowly rebounded, and statisticians are getting more phone calls from news agencies.
I was asked to comment a few months ago now on something else that had been added onto this list of gives you cancer, and it was drinking really hot drinks. So drinking hot teas and things like that increased your risk of getting throat cancer. It was really good that this time around the newspapers were contacting statisticians before they wrote their headlines and before they wrote their articles, because they'd learned a lesson from the bacon story last time. And they were saying, you know, is this something that we need to be worried about? What are the actual risks? And it wasn't, in this instance, it wasn't actually just the risks, it was looking at the temperatures that you needed to be drinking. You know, it was really, really extreme temperatures that people drink, say, matcha tea in South America. We actually drink our tea and coffee at not that hot a temperature in this country because, you know, we add milk and all that sort of stuff. And even if we drink it black, we don't tend to drink really, really, really scorching hot cups of tea and coffee. So we don't need to be worried about it. But it would have been quite easy for the newspapers to say drinking hot drinks gives you cancer, and that would have caused, you know, could you imagine the British person not being able to drink their cup of tea anymore? You know, that would have caused an uproar.
And with the tea crisis averted, there's only one real final question. Red sauce, brown sauce, or no sauce?
Red sauce, no butter as well. It's just got to be, and toast. I like it toasted, no butter, red sauce.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks for the University of Oxford, with music from John Lyons, the Real Vocal String Quartet, and Jason Weinberger and the WCF Symphony. And a very special thanks to Dr. Jen Rogers. Tell us what you think about this podcast. On Twitter, we are at Oxford Sparks. We're also on Facebook, and we have this little thing called a website. You can find it at oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk, and there is tons of cool stuff on there. I'm Emily Elias, and until next time on the podcast, when we ask, how do we predict the weather? Bye for now.